'Twas the night before Jesus, when all through the earth every creature was stirring for a new baby's birth. Words from the night before Jesus, Concordia Publishing House's new Christmas book. The night before Jesus would make a great Christmas gift for children, grandchildren, and godchildren ages 3 through 5. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for December, The Night Before Jesus.
There is a dogmatic connection in Washington and among media analysts all over to the idea that Islam is a religion of peace.
What's not acceptable to the professional evolutionist is a God who actually physically does things, a God who intervenes in the natural world.
This is a total arbitrary decision to create a God in your own image that happens to be a mystical idea, but not a lot of comfort when you get news in the hospital that you have a week to live.
Why we're so insistent on the Bible is because this is where God speaks. This is the objective thing so that we know who He is. This is how He reveals Himself to us.
New dads like this from the Issues Etc.
Well, it's considered almost axiomatic, isn't it, that for the last 30 or 40 years, perhaps even half a century, the congregations and the denominations associated with mainline liberalism have been in a steady decline numerically, while there has been growth in other sectors of American Christianity, or at least a less steep decline in other sectors of American Christianity. Sometimes the divide is made between liberal and conservative churches. Then there is the story from the Religion News Service about the closing of inner city churches, in this case, Episcopal churches that are African American. How do we understand these two things together? What is the relationship between the decline of inner city churches, the decline of mainline Protestant denominations, and maybe the less steep decline of other churches in the United States? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. on this Wednesday afternoon, December the 12th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about media coverage of the future of inner city churches. Terry Mattingly will be our guest. A little bit later, Joy Pullman joins us from The Federalist. We'll talk about the feminist life script, how it has been making women miserable, and it's about time women stopped listening to it. Then Pastor Jordan Cooper will be our guest. It'll be part two of our series with him, responding to Calvinist proof text. Today we'll be looking at John 10, 14 through 18. Feel free to join us with questions or comments. Our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our Twitter address, @issuesetc. And the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to discuss media coverage of the future of inner-city churches, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
We've discussed this, as I said, almost now axiom that conservative churches tend to grow or at least shrink less quickly, and liberal churches are shrinking at what is really a shocking rate over the last 50 years or so. How did this Religion News Service story about the decline of African-American churches or any inner-city churches bring this back up for you?
Well, first of all, let me make one point here, which is that in the American South and in the Bible Belt, most of these churches that we're talking about are inner-city churches, but you have similar phenomena going on in smaller cities, and as far as I know, in some denominations, even things that we would call towns as opposed to cities themselves. So the urban environment issue is certainly crucial. I'm not minimizing that. But the story has become bigger than that and broader. And I guess my whole point here is how complex this story is, and reporters have to have several different issues in mind when they start talking about why are certain types of churches closing. There isn't one simple answer for that. The Religion News story appealed to me in that I thought the subject was really interesting, the focus on Episcopal churches in North Carolina and the fact that they're having to close, frankly, a rather shocking number of these churches. And then that's beginning to affect other things. When African-American Episcopal churches go away, what happens to the kind of culture that produces African-American priests? And then when you have a shortage of African-American priests, how does that affect a denomination that thinks of itself as being a strong advocate of inclusion? And I can think of a lot of denominations that this would affect. So this story about the closing of a particular African-American church in Warrenton, North Carolina, when I saw it, I went, wow, now there's a good subject for a story. And when I got into it, I was surprised that it really didn't address the issues of church decline at all. It simply seemed to assume them or to avoid them. And that really struck me and made me want to dig into that. And then right at that same time, as I was reading that story, I set that story aside for a day or two. And right in the midst of that, a little mini fracas broke out on Twitter involving some tweets by the conservative activist Mark Tooley of the Institute for Religion and Democracy, someone whose whole existence as a writer and thinker is to observe what's happening in the old Seven Sisters, the old churches of what used to be called mainline Protestantism. I now prefer to refer to them as old line Protestantism. And he put out the following set of statistics. Episcopal Church peaked in 1966 with 3.4 million members. Now, 1.7 million. 50% loss. I've heard figures stronger than that. Some people think we're headed toward a million pretty quickly. Presbyterian Church USA peaked 1965, 4.4 million. Now 1.4 million, 68% loss. Now you've got some other things going on there with church mergers, another thing, but still. United Church of Christ peaked 1965, right before Cultural Revolution, Vietnam, etc., really, with 2.1 million. Now, 850,000, 60% loss. Evangelical Lutherans, ELCA, peaked with 5.9, now 3.5 million, 41% loss. Well, you know these waters pretty well. What do you think happened when Mark Tooley put that up on Twitter?
Well, I guess what I would assume is that there was some, off the top of my head, some bashing of the Seven Sisters and mainline Protestantism. Some I told you so's.
A little bit of triumphalism, but who else do you think responded?
I don't know. Who would that be?
Well, I mean, the actual advocates of these particular denominations, at which point they began to say something that is partially valid. They began to say, look, what's happening in American religion is now affecting everybody. Let's stop bashing liberal churches because nobody's doing that great a job with the rise of, wait for it, the religiously unaffiliated, the nuns, N-O-N-E-S. And that's true. And then people say, after all, the Southern Baptists are shrinking now. Everybody loves to quote that, and it's true. And several people will comment with things like, if it weren't for Latino Catholics, the Roman Catholic Church in America would be in statistical free fall. That's another accurate comment. However, at some point, you still have to stop and say, especially if you're covering a story about the closing, the tragic closing of African American heritage Episcopal churches, at some point, you do have to say, well, yeah, the Southern Baptist Convention has gone from 16 million to 15 million in the last decade or two. I mean, that's a significant loss, but that's not the same as losing 60% of your members, 50% of your members, half your members. People are now beginning to look at kind of a demographic doomsday machine for some of these churches. So we could almost make a list here of the valid stories to cover. So first of all, it is a valid story to focus on the unique factors that have led to the decline of the seven sisters. At the same time, you have to stop and say, it's valid to say, well, if African American Episcopal churches are declining, why are African American Southern Baptist churches growing? And while the Southern Baptists are wrestling with dropped baptisms and other dark statistics, why are there African American and Latino churches some of the good news that's going on in Southern Baptist life right now? So what you have there is one part of the chart's going down while the other part of the chart's going up. Then you look and see, well, how are those mainline churches doing with African Americans? So that's like a subset of this story. Latinos, of course, are another very important issue. Later in the Twitter wars about this, Mark Tooley put up another set of statistics. Assemblies of God, 1965, about 570,000 people. Now, 3.2 million people. Now, there you go. That's a very interesting statistic. And the Assemblies of God is one of the most racially inclusive denominations in America. And of course, that also raises the issue of Pentecostalism and the worship styles and preaching and all that goes with that. He also noted growth curves at the Church of God Cleveland, the Christian Missionary Alliance, the Church of the Nazarene. Now, that's a particularly interesting one. I would not have thought the Nazarenes were growing. And this is not a huge denomination, but Church of the Nazarene 65 is 343,000. And today, there are about 630,000 people. Once again, that's not a mega denomination, but that's a significant growth. Several people have commented that the Church of the Nazarene might be, with its Wesleyan roots, might be a church that's beginning to pick up some of the fallout from the United Methodist Wars, a church that's going to be very much in the news, I think, as we've discussed, in the fact that in February, they're having a special general conference to try to settle once and for all the issue of how to cope with changing sexual morality and the doctrines affecting them, with some people trying to propose the creation of a denomination in which it wouldn't matter what you believe about same-sex marriage or transgender issues or whatever. Try to be kind of doctrinally neutral on the very hottest subjects, you know, in American church life. So I could go on and on with this, but you can see my point. There are a lot of different trends affecting this. Evangelism is certainly one of them. Doctrines related to evangelism would include things like universalism. Does salvation come through faith in Jesus Christ alone? You might remember the TMAT trio, the doctrines that I use when probing divisions among Christians. And those three doctrines are, the first one is the resurrection was a real historical event within time. So a literal, mysterious, but literal concept of the resurrection. Number two is salvation is found through faith in Jesus Christ alone. And third, the hot button issue, which I word this way, sex outside of marriage is a sin. And I'm deliberately attempting to make the issues there broader than homosexuality. I would say that all three of those issues play some role in the debates about the doctrine here. But another topic, and I realize I'm rambling on, but let me try to keep this straight. Another crucial issue here is birth rate. What has happened to the size of families? What has happened to the ability of some denominations to retain faith in their young people, to pass faith successfully on to others? What has happened with churches that have been able to do a better job of starting new congregations, perhaps in growing areas? We can even find people who believe that the worship wars have played a major role in why some churches decline and others don't. How many issues have I listed off here now? Probably about 6 to 8 related issues all linked to this story. It's fascinating, but do you think black Episcopalians probably worship a little bit differently than black members of the Assemblies of God?
I would think so.
Yeah, and I'm saying that as someone who is a liturgical Christian, someone who went from Southern Baptist life to Eastern Orthodox. I'm aware that in an American context, an intensely Protestant context, liturgical churches might struggle reaching some people, which is not the same thing as saying that they have to decline. Anyway, I could go on and on with this. You could tell it's a subject that intrigues me. And this issue of black Episcopalians and their churches closing really pushed a button, because just think of all the issues that would be related to that when you compare those churches with the successful, growing, even booming African-American churches and other traditions. Isn't that interesting?
Terry Mattingly is our guest on this Wednesday afternoon. We're talking about media coverage of the future of inner city churches. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. When we come back, there's one other angle that I'd like him to consider, and that is birth rate. Thanks to our listeners, Issues Etc. has operated independently and in the black for 10 consecutive years. With 3 weeks left in 2018, we're $77,000 short of projected expenses. Please make a year-end tax-deductible gift to support this worldwide outreach. You can make a secure online contribution at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check, make your check payable to Issues Etc., and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death, and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Advent season at lutheranpublicradio.org. Sacred music for the Advent season, LutheranPublicRadio.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of the future of inner city churches. Terry, there's an angle that you mentioned briefly when we were talking before the break that I'd like you to explore a little bit more, and perhaps I wonder whether or not it would be of particular journalistic interest when talking about the general decline of churches and maybe even the closing of inner city churches, and that is the fertility rate or the birth rate.
Well, that certainly is an issue when you look at demographics of the kind of urban and some would even say elite congregations that are involved here. One of the first things that leaps to mind for me is a very famous quote from a number of years ago when the leader of the Episcopal Church in America, presiding Bishop Catherine Jeffords Shorey, was being interviewed by the New York Times, and they asked her about the membership of the church, and it was how it was doing. And she said about 2.2 million. Note that that's like 1.6 million. And then listen to this. It used to be larger percentage-wise, but Episcopalians tend to be better educated and tend to reproduce at lower rates than some other denominations. Roman Catholics and Mormons both have theological reasons for producing lots of children. I believe there's another case where she brings up environmentalism. Like, of course we're declining. We're trying to have smaller families for the sake of the environment. Basically what she's saying is, you know, of course our church is declining. We don't have lots of babies, which that's an interesting way of thinking about it, as opposed to Catholics and Mormons, who we all know how they view women and large families, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, birth rate is going to be huge here. Just look at what's happening in Europe. I mean, this was the subject of my column last week, my national column about some statements by Pope Francis, in which he mentions we really shouldn't be anxious because we're having to close so many churches in Europe. Well, look at the birth rates in Italy and in the rest of Europe, especially if you take out immigrant populations. Italy has a birth rate of like 1.3. But I want to point out that birth rate is not just something that affects liberal churches. One of the churches that stands out in these debates over church decline and the causes of church decline, a lot of people immediately bring up the Missouri Synod Lutherans and look at reasons for statistical decline in the Missouri Synod, because at that point you can hardly point at them and say, well, look, this is obviously the result of rampant theological liberalism. So, I mean, liberal Lutherans like to say, well, look, there's things going on in our culture that's causing the Missouri Synod Lutherans to decline. And you know what? That's a perfectly accurate statement. In the context of Missouri Synod, what are the issues that you hear discussed linked to decline?
Well, it's actually rather controversial. And one of them, the most controversial one, is that issue that you were just talking about. And that is the fertility rate, because we have, as demographically, we have matched the culture in terms of a declining fertility rate. And many among us have pointed out that that was a hand grenade we pulled the pin on 30 years ago, and you can't change the birth rate. You can't change it when it was being set 30 years ago and now just being counted in terms of membership decline today. So it's actually rather controversial. It usually kind of comes down to,
yeah,
we never should have bought into the culture's notion of what makes a big family, and we should have stayed with where we were on that. And then on the other side of the debate, it's usually we're not doing enough evangelism, although our numbers actually show us in terms of evangelism, this is stunning to state, but it's true, in terms of growth and retention related to evangelism, outdoing the Southern Baptists. So it's a confusing picture, Terry.
Yeah, and I would imagine that other issues quickly become attached, especially in a church which makes such a strong effort to have Lutheran education and alternative schools. And I imagine that there are fairly large homeschool networks among some Missouri Synod Lutherans, maybe more than others, but in areas where they don't have their own schools. But the minute you look at the families that support those kinds of efforts, don't you tend to see larger families? I know in homeschooling, you consistently see that homeschool families have more children than others. So then you begin to have other cultural issues come up. Do large families represent a kind of rejection of the cultural ethos of secularized modern America? Years ago, the Weekly Standard did a piece on this that just ended with a very blunt statement. If you find any families in America with more than three children, 90% of the time they're making a theological statement about what they value in life. And I don't think there's any way to deny that. that there is a religious doctrinal component to the love of large families, just as there is a doctrinal component to which churches are more active in evangelism than there are others. All of these hooks that grow out of this complex story, almost all of them, maybe other than real estate trends and some finances related to locations, almost all of these trends end up, when you scratch them, you begin to hit arguments about doctrine and culture and being different from the surrounding culture and maybe even being willing to offend the surrounding culture. And the minute you start answering those questions, you say, well, it's just not safe to believe a lot of those things anymore. And now you're into another debate. And the next thing you know, people are arguing about doctrine straight on. So I guess my point here is that if you're going to cover the growing number of closing churches, the churches that are turning into, in some cases, mosques, or being turned into condominiums or museums or pubs in some cases, you can't just write about closing churches unless you're willing to talk to people about why churches close. And then you go into that conversation knowing that it's not a simple subject. It's a subject with multiple layers, and almost all of them have doctrinal content that you just can't avoid.
Another angle that I was thinking about was, while we can't predict the future, we can see it at least being attempted. And I'm thinking here about largely Western European countries that are ahead of us in terms of this new numerical decline. And what kind of cultural, social, and political effects come after a certain critical mass in the opposite direction, not a buildup of to a certain size, but a decline to a certain size occurs in a culture when it comes to churches?
Yeah, at a certain point, do the engines of the secularization project, at what point do you almost have to fight them head on, which to some degree means rejecting what they believe, saying that you reject what they believe, and being willing to pay a price for rejecting what they believe. And now we've come full circle back to some of the key elements of the thesis of Rod Dreher's controversial book, The Benedict Option, and other similar statements, including things that a man named Cardinal Ratzinger said back in the late 60s about Europe. The man who later, this theologian, would later become Pope Benedict XVI. The subjects aren't going away. I would also point out really quickly, a lot of journalists, and I hope there are journalists that hear this, either in podcast form or whatever, we're all going to be looking at this story about the United Methodists and the battle for control of the United Methodist Church and its future. Well, just think about how much that story is being affected by the explosion of United Methodism in Africa and in other parts of the world, areas where, to just be blunt about it, they have lots of babies and they have lots of converts. There's no way around that issue. At the same time, when you look in the United States, where do you find the biggest, most thriving United Methodist churches? They're not in blue zip codes being led by people with extremely liberal theologies. Once again, how do you cover this story if you are not willing to discuss these very, very hot button issues?
Have you seen any decent journalism in the last 20 years on the epicenter of Christianity moving south? And I'm not just talking about south in terms of the United States, but actually south in terms of the globe.
Well, of course, you had the tremendous cover story at the Atlantic Monthly called The Next Christendom by a historian whose last name is Philip Jenkins, isn't it? And Jenkins, that story got a lot of attention. and led to a book on the same topic. And the fact that it ran in a place as important as the Atlantic Monthly meant that it did get some attention, but you didn't see it make its way to the front of the New York Times or 60 Minutes. I mean, unless I'm forgetting stories, I don't remember a whole lot of coverage of that topic. Yet in Catholicism, in mainline Protestantism, and soon among evangelicals, these issues of race and culture and the global South, they're not going to be able to deny them either. Let me stress what I said early on in this. The Southern Baptist Convention's numbers right now would be way worse without their African-American and Latino congregations. The Roman Catholic Church would be in statistical freefall without Latino Catholics. These issues are coming for everybody at some point in the near future, and that means, I hope, journalists are going to be willing to cover them.
Another question before we wrap this up, and that is, I think the number of people who at least express an association with Christianity in the most nominal and general sense hasn't declined to the degree that these numbers have declined. There has been, as you mentioned before, the rise of the nuns, and that's undeniable. But the total number of people hasn't declined at the same rate as the specific declines in these denominations. How would you go about understanding that as a journalist?
Well, if you look at the Pew Forum numbers and the people who interpret them, what does seem to be vanishing is the world of nominal Christianity. If you're looking for big losses, that's where you see them. I was talking to the scholar John Green a number of years ago about this, and he says he doesn't see the more conservative, hyperactive segment of American religion falling below 20-22%, where it's been for a long time. Meanwhile, atheist, agnostic, and the nuns are growing. That section of the American population is definitely growing. What's shrinking is the nominal, mushy middle. I think the question to ask is, what was the faith of the people in the mushy middle? And that leads us once again to what churches are growing, which ones are shrinking, especially which churches have the lowest birth rates, which churches have the lowest evangelism rates, which churches are having the greatest struggle retaining their young people. Unfortunately, for the mainline Protestants, the evidence is they're in the middle of all of those crosshairs on doctrinal issues related to those three points. I don't see any way for them to deny it. At the same time, I don't see the ability of Catholics, Southern Baptists, Missouri Synod Lutherans, and some other people to deny that they are also beginning to be affected by some of those trends. I think if you're in a church that claims to be evangelical and it's not growing, or it's not even plateaued, it's aging, it's shrinking, it's declining, at some point you have to stop and think and ask, have we evolved into a kind of de facto old line Protestant church? And as you have stressed with the debates among Missouri Synod Lutherans, those are painful questions to ask and tough ones to get answers to.
With only 30 seconds, Terry, here, within the next 25 years, will journalism be recording the extinction of one of the seven sisters? Will it become now the six sisters, and which one would it be, do you think?
Well, I think you're going to see some mergers. The ones that are declining the fastest tend to be the Disciples of Christ and the United Church of Christ. We may also see some other splits that would affect this. If the Methodists genuinely split, then you're going to have different trends perhaps in each of those. But I would keep my eyes on the Disciples of Christ. That's who I would watch the closest.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's also founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
If you appreciate our weekly interviews with Terry on media coverage of religion, Please make a year-end tax-deductible contribution to support the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org or by check. Make your check payable to Issues, etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. With 3 weeks left in 2018, we're $77,000 short of projected expenses. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your financial support at the end of 2018. On the other side of the break, Joy Pullman of The Federalist joins us. She once lived according to the feminist life script. Then something changed all that. We'll find out what it was after this.
For to us a child is born, to us a son is given. This child, Jesus Christ, is the focus of every Christmas card that Emmanuel Press offers. Whether in stained glass, illumination, or classic works of art, Christmas cards from Emmanuel Press joyfully confess our Savior's birth with the words of Scripture and the poetry of hymns. Visit their website at emmanuelpress.us to create a custom assortment of cards. EmmanuelPress.us.
Mount Zion Lutheran Church in Greenfield, Wisconsin, is a congregation of those gathered by the Spirit of the Lord around His saving word and sacraments. At the center of our life together is the divine service of the risen Jesus, the Lamb of God who was slain, who takes away the sin of the world. If you are in the Milwaukee area, we invite you to share with us in our Lord's gifts of forgiveness and new life. Services are on Saturdays at 5 p.m. and Sundays at 9 a.m. For more information, visit our website at mountziongreenfield.org.
What does it mean to say that the Word became flesh and dwelt among us? This great mystery is the thread that runs throughout the December issue of The Lutheran Witness. Some articles celebrate the birth of Jesus. Others explore the theological mystery of human embodiment. Still others do both at once, providing a holiday feast of reflection on Christ's incarnation. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth, Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Our school is committed to authentic Lutheranism, the entire Book of Concord, and indeed to authentic Lutheranism as it has continued to be confessed and practiced through the centuries right up into our own time.
Dr. Cameron McKenzie, chairman of the Department of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
We're committed then to biblical, confessional Christianity and Lutheranism and applying it to the world of today in as effective a way as we can.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana at ctsfw.edu, ctsfw.edu, or call 1-800-481-2155. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.